is Denton. This whole town is infested with killer cockroaches. Repeat, killer cockroaches.
No kidding.
Welcome back, everyone, to this 40th episode of Through the Aftermath. I'm your host, Sean, and with me once again is Jonathan. How you doing, Jonathan?
Doing great. And as I say this, I'm bowing towards Las Vegas for reasons that are probably not hard to figure out.
Yes. Some game launched last week, didn't it?
That's what I heard, at least. But I wasn't listening because I was playing another game that was in Vegas. Oh, wait, we're talking about the same one? I don't know. Of course we are.
Yes.
So good.
Yes, we'll talk about that in a little bit because I have some stories from it already. I haven't played it too much, but
same here.
But we also have a third here on the show, which is kind of a rarity for us. We have Bill from Hawaii. How you doing, Bill?
Hey, Sean. Jonathan, how you guys doing?
We're doing great. Yeah, it's glad to have you on here. Of course, you do Megaton. Your name on the forums, the now dead forums, was Megaton, and you have megaton.us, and we're going to talk quite a bit about your site, actually, but why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, about the site and kind of where you got started and, you know, the projects and everything and how they've evolved.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, like you said, the current version of the, you know, my personal blog is at megaton.us. I actually started that back in 2005 or so. Back then it was called Doomarama.com. And basically it was just a place for me to keep track of books that I wanted to read or notes about books that I had read, you know, mostly for my own use so that I could refer back to it later on and, you know, just tell if I had read something before or if I, you know, I'd put down some notes about it. And then over the years, you know, people started reading it, and so I started writing it more as if there was you know, an actual audience. And so I started posting book reviews and, you know, other interesting things that I had come across on the web. And so it turned into, you know, just your normal post-apocalyptic blog. And so from that, you know, I've always been interested in kind of tinkering to different projects on the web, you know, trying to learn how to do different things. And so I had accumulated a bunch of RSS feeds, basically, or websites that I like to read. I had them in my Google Reader. And I wanted to be able to share that with people. So then I went ahead and created the postapocalyptic.info website. Don't know if you've been using that, but basically that is a stream of about 40 different RSS feeds all relating to the postapocalyptic or the zombie genres. And that's you know, a set of news that comes in there and is updated live. And so you can always refer back to that and you'll be kept up to date with stuff that's going on. So those are my two main personal sites right now.
Nice. You know, it's funny because when we first started Through the Aftermath, I think you were one of the first people who contacted us. And you know, we started the podcast to be about post-apocalyptic media, of course. So the whole media thing, I mean, and then you were doing this for a long time before that. And I think, didn't you say that you were actually thinking about doing a podcast yourself?
Yeah, well, I had always, you know, kind of thought about it, kind of thought it would be interesting to use, you know, the kind of the news items that are coming across in the postapocalyptic.info feed. And in fact, don't know if you know this, if this was a setup question, but I actually have recorded one test episode and one actual episode of the postapocalyptic.info show.
Oh, cool. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, yeah, the test episode I did about 4 weeks ago, and then 2 weeks later I put out the first real episode. Basically, awesome. I do, you know, it's a kind of a review of what I've been up to in the genre. You know, it's kind of based on the general format of your guys' show. You know, talk about what I've been reading, mostly movies I've seen, do book reviews. And then I go through a list of the interesting items that have appeared on the news feed for the last week or two. So, you know, they're news items, they're, you know, maybe old post-apocalyptic videos or other sites that I come across, and, you know, just kind of do a half-hour show, you know, kind of to update people on what's going on in the genre, whether it be news or just things that they may not have seen before.
Cool. I like that. You know, this show is kind of, it's a little heavy on the gaming side, you know, because, I mean, I work as a game journalist, and Jonathan's a huge gamer, and so we tend to talk a lot about games. So I think it's important, you know, I mean, I didn't know that you were doing this podcast, but I think it's pretty cool and important for our listeners to, you know, maybe go check out your podcast, you know, once you start getting it going and everything.
Yeah, just the actual, if I was keeping to the same schedule, then the episode 2 would have been this past Sunday, but there wasn't a whole lot going on in the genre recently, so I didn't really have enough news items, but yeah, I definitely hope to keep that up. Looking into possibly getting a co-host, you know, kind of, again, basing it off of, you know, this show. And then, yeah, like you said, kind of focusing more on, you know, books, maybe some movies, and just in general news that's happening in the genre. I'm not a gamer myself, so I don't, you know, have too much knowledge on that end. But there definitely is a lot going on in the genre other than, you know, just on the gaming side.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is we get a lot of emails, actually, from people who say that, you know, they like the show, they like the idea, but they're like, you know, I'm not really a gamer. So I kind of zone that stuff out. You know, we do stay a little heavy on the gaming stuff, just kind of by default.
Yeah, it's still interesting.
Yeah. well, cool. Yeah, I'm really excited to have you on the show. You know, what we're going to do is the three of us are going to collaborate and talk a little bit about the scariest post-apocalyptic movies, of course, because we have Halloween. And by the time this comes out, we're recording this on Wednesday, but it'll probably be a few days before Halloween. So you'll have enough time to listen to the show and then run out and watch our favorite post-apocalyptic scary movie. So I actually came up with a list of a few. Jonathan said he has a few, and we're just going to, you know, kind of keep it casual and talk about, you know, nothing too formal, but just talk about our favorites and, like, why they're the scariest, even the scariest moments of them. And, Jonathan, you said you have some parts from books, too, right?
Yeah, I kind of mixed it up just a tad because there was a couple of – it's funny because when I was trying to come up with some of these scary moments, it's funny that there was a couple of books in particular that are post-apocalyptic types that I remember being almost more horrified reading the book because – you know how it is. It's in your mind. You see it, you know – that I probably was even watching either a movie later or the movie version of the book, kind of a thing. So, yeah, it'll be kind of a little fun little mix-up, and we'll see how many people out there who are listeners are like, oh, God, yeah, oh, God.
Yeah, definitely. Well, before we do that, before we get into that main topic thing, let's go ahead and get the Fallout New Vegas stuff out of the way. I know you're itching to.
Well, yeah, I have never heard it said so more exciting and condescending at the same time. No, I'm just no, and it's funny because, you know, I truth be told, this is definitely, you know, enough stuff for probably a whole episode. So, you know, we figured we'd keep it light and fun, if for any other reason than to touch on the fact that the moment had come that, you know, the gates of Vegas did open. But, yeah, this is something, you know, it was enough probably for another episode in and of itself, but we thought we'd just touch on the fact that you know, New Vegas had come out, and, yeah, you know, it's, you know, you mentioned you had a couple things you wanted to share really quick about it.
Well, I really haven't had a lot of time with the game. I'm really still pretty early into it. I just got to the NCR, let's see, there's like a little outpost with some tents, and you have to go in and save the deputy, I mean, in Prim. That's where I'm at right now. I'm still in Prim, which is very, very early on in the game. I haven't had a lot of time. I'm kind of bummed about that because it's, you know, I bought it when it came out, and then I was really looking forward to it. And then, of course, Fable 3 comes out, and it's like, oh, geez, what are they doing? From what I've played so far, I mean, it's only been, I don't know, maybe 4 hours, I would say. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy it. I think it's so much like Fallout 3 that it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of too obvious. It's kind of too much like Fallout 3. I mean, that's not a bad thing because I love Fallout 3, but it's almost like an expansion for Fallout 3. You know what I mean? It's a lot of the same stuff. But there have been a lot of improvements, which I haven't really experienced too much yet. I'm really enjoying the story. I'm really enjoying kind of the new take on the Vegas part of it. I haven't been to Vegas yet, but the whole, the desert thing as opposed to, the DC wasteland. I really enjoy that. I really enjoy the kind of references already that I've seen back to the original games. You know, talking about the Desert Rangers and stuff like that. But that's, like I said, that's about as far as I've gotten. What I think if I were to complain about one thing, if I were to give a con on one thing, the voice acting, I was told, was supposed to be so top-notch. You know, it was supposed to be all these big stars were going to be doing their voices in there. And maybe I haven't gotten up to that part yet, but everything I've seen has been just really bad voice acting. I don't know.
No, it's funny you mention that because one thing I have picked up is, and I'm not sure if this is a glitch or something, but because I know that a lot of the Xbox 360 users have been dealing with some rather amusing bugs, but I noticed that there seems to be like a lot of the same voices I'm hearing over and over kind of things, and my one complaint, and I'll tell you, there's actually a good part of this, but like my one complaint in the game is, in Fallout 3, I wanted to listen to the radio because hearing that 50s music was so perfect. Yeah. In this one, it's almost irritating because it's got that 50s country and western, and my wife who, and now this is mind-blowing because I'm not a country person. My wife, on the other hand, is. When I mention 50s country, my wife goes, oh, God, and just, like, walks away. So I must not be the only one thinking that. So, but the one thing I will say, because I had a fear much like yours, when I started playing this, I was like, wow, this is a lot like Fallout 3, and that's not a bad thing. And, it kind of seems like an extension. But I couldn't find that link between Fallout 2 that I was looking for, that feel, that ambience. And then, all of a sudden, I got to it. And I will say, you're getting close to where I started feeling the click happen. Oh, okay. And I don't know, it's just a difference in the way the game starts, and I almost wonder if they kind of, while I didn't mind it, it almost didn't start in the right mindset I would have started. It started a little slow, but once it ramps, it's like, oh my goodness. And then the big stuff starts to kick in, and that's my only complaint is, I know there's going to be people who may not give it a chance far enough in to feel that, but hang in there and you'll eat it up. But yeah, I mean, it's so far it's a hoot. And there's I have to share one thing though. This is a freaking riot. So okay, I live right by Las Vegas. So naturally, I'm like, wow, it's funny that there's these cities. And I knew Prim was real because that roller coaster, you can see it when you're driving to California. It's right off the interstate. And so I pull out this map, and me and my buddy Rob are at work looking at it, and we're like, there's Prim, and there's Good Springs, and all of a sudden I start realizing the map is exactly the same map. And then I'm like, wait a minute, does that mean? And I follow it downward, and I'm like, and all of a sudden there's Nipton, and I'm like, no freaking way. And I start following the map around, and sure enough, the map, while not to scale, obviously, if you go down that interstate, where the NCR base is going over the hill.
Is it 15?
Yeah, I-15. Yeah, yeah, yeah. As you go where that interchange is, where you see the statues, that's the mountain pass you go through to cross into California. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's exactly like the real map. It's like, it's smaller, and albeit, Novak, obviously, is just there as an interchange in real life. But I told Rob, I'm like, okay, this is asking for some funny pictures that I have to take since I live right by it. I have to get some pictures which might... and I won't say too much here, but let's just say that my, easy to predict Halloween costume will fit right into this. So, yeah. Yeah, I had to be the, after seeing your Raider outfit, I'm like, okay, I've got to do this too. So, yeah, you'll get a kick out of this because I have a feeling somehow, even though we're not, like, by each other, we're going to end up in the same pick in some form.
Yeah, that costume was really cool, Sean. That was neat.
Yeah, hands down, fantastic.
That's not a costume. That's real.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, yeah, you got to work in that every day. People really died for that.
I blew up a car to get those tires.
Yeah, that's real blood on my face.
Yeah.
I know we'll probably end up talking about it in another episode, I'm sure.
Yeah, because I want to play through it a lot more. Okay. I want to get to the point where at least finish it, maybe, and if at least once. I mean, when we talked about Fallout 3, I finished it a couple times and, made sure that I knew a lot about it. But, I want to make sure we at least finish it.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about that one day. I'm excited about seeing a little bit more. Now, you talk about the music. It's funny. I actually love that music.
It's a hoot at first.
Yeah. But then I noticed that once you start a little bit farther down, you start getting kind of the Frank Sinatra stuff, you know.
Yeah, it does start to, and some of the radio stations are absolutely a riot, but there's a couple that you'll hear every time you go into people's houses, and it seems to be the same couple songs. And after a while, I was like, okay, you know what? You know, Frank Sinatra I can take, but what the hell is this? You know, I mean, it was like, even my wife was like, what are you listening to? That's not normal. So, yeah.
Cool.
But it's good, though.
Cool. Yeah, and so far, I mean, the bugs I keep hearing about, I'm playing on 360, but I keep hearing about the bugs, and I had a bug really early on. This is the only story I really want to tell about experience, but, you know, Sunny Smiles, the girl at the very, very beginning.
Yeah.
In the tutorial. So I talk to her, she takes me over to shoot the geckos, and so I shoot a couple, and she's like, great job, and then she runs off, and I'm like, okay, I guess I'm done with that. So I go back to Good Springs, and I talk to somebody, and they say, okay, talk to Sunny Smiles in the bar, you know, to get to your next mission. So she's not there. I'm like, okay. So I follow the arrow leading me to where she's at, and I find her dead out in the desert. So I'm stuck. I mean, I can't continue with the next mission. I can't do anything. She's laying there dead. So I had to restart my character and remake a new character. That was the first bug, and it was like an hour into the game. Well, not even an hour into the game.
It's like symbolic almost. You made some very powerful enemies, Sonny.
I'm like, I wonder if when they tested the game, if that ever happened.
Yeah, they've had some. You know what? And truth be told, I don't make light of bugs. Although this is the part that's the most amusing is people go, you know, I'm like, oh man, you know, it's the original Fallout 2 developers, and they're trying to make it just like Fallout 2. Oh, I've been playing it. There's a lot of bugs. Yeah, they're trying to make it exactly like Fallout 2. You know, I mean, that's been the running joke where I'm like, yeah, obviously you didn't play Fallout 2 where your car vanished. You know. It's like, come on, it's the original Fallout developers. This is part of the fun, you know?
It's hardcore mode, right?
It's hardcore, yeah, literally. We were playing it. We just didn't know. That was the glitch.
Yeah. Well, so let's go ahead and get into these movies here, because we have quite a bit to talk about here. And, you know, we want to scare people, right? We want to get them ready for Halloween. So so what I did was I listed my top five. Now, Jonathan, you said you had a few too, but I wanted to go over some of these, and I'm not really going to do them in order, I don't think, because I think it's hard to pick. Some of them I like for different reasons, some for the plot, some for, you know, one scene that was done, and some of them are, you know, kind of jump out scariness versus real, like, you know, what if this happened to me kind of scariness. So I'm going to start with the first one here, and I'm going to go with Threads. Now, Threads was a movie we talked about, we had an entire episode about it. And we talked about how much, you know, how real it is. And this is the one where it was the town of Sheffield in the UK. And there was kind of, you know, the U.S. and Russia were bombing each other. And the U.K. was kind of caught in the middle. It was very gritty, very realistic. There was kind of some of the scary parts were, you know, people were dying in the rubble. You know, they're stuck. They have, you know, the radiation poisoning. And from a perspective of this could really happen, I think that it was a really scary movie. It scared a lot of people back then. I mean, I was reading up on it. I'm reading a lot of forums and stuff like that, and people are talking about the movie and how it was just the scariest, you know, post-apocalyptic movie ever, and they say that it's so scary because they actually had nightmares about it, you know, because it was one of those that it's not going to jump out and scare you, but it's going to make you think about it for the next few weeks, you know.
Because wasn't it, it's filmed kind of in a documentary style, so it really did seem as if they were showing you things that, you know, really were happening. And so, yeah, it's that realism that adds the scariness to it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I mean. It was just one of those things where if you want to be scared in that way, in that kind of, you know, lingering terror kind of a way where it's you know, they weren't afraid to kind of tackle the real gritty details of what could actually happen. You know, talking about a nuclear winter and the effects of radiation and things like that. I mean, it was just, it was scary.
Well, the way they did it, too, the thing that's eerie for me, and I kid you not, like, after really, you know, seeing a lot of these movies, Threads is probably my favorite of all just because of that. I mean, you know, you have a lot of movies where you have obvious actors and people who are acting. I swear to God, I watched that movie, and I feel like, kind of like District 9, you almost believe that guy was really Wickets, you know? I mean, you didn't really believe that, you know, that was some guy pretending to be that guy. It's like, you felt like you were watching a real documentary, and that's how, like, these guys, there's not an obvious overacting going on. It's like, how do you tell that main girl, oh, by the way, you're going to play a girl who got pregnant, and then, oh, by the way, right after that, you're going to be eating a cattle that have died from radiation poisoning? Yeah. And, I mean, how do you write that down?
Yeah.
Just amazing.
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, when I think of kind of the opposite of that, I mean, we've picked on this movie before, but 2012... it's kind of the opposite of that, because it's so sensationalistic, you know, and it's so like, that is not real, you know. So I think that this movie was kind of, it really struck a deep nerve, you know.
It did.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, along the same lines of Threads, have you guys seen the cartoon When the Wind Blows?
No, I don't think I have.
So. Yeah, this doesn't sound familiar.
That's another BBC movie. It came out around the same time, 85 or so. And I think that it was originally a graphic novel. And, you know, the movie followed the graphic novel very closely. And it's basically the story of a middle-aged couple living in, you know, suburbs of England somewhere during a nuclear war. And they're just clueless about how to deal with it. You know, the husband has all these old civil defense pamphlets that he breaks out, and he's trying to build, you know, like radiation shelters in the house by putting, you know, stuff up against the wall and trying to seal it off with plastic and stuff. And it's a cartoon, so you don't think that it's going to be, you know, very real or graphic, but over the course of the movie, you're basically just watching this couple die. And then, you know, at the end, it doesn't turn out very good for them at all. So it's another one of those where, just like Threads, you know, it really punches you in the gut, and it really makes you think that, you know, there's not a whole lot you can do when these situations really do happen. Yeah. And things probably aren't going to turn out very well for you.
Don't you shout at me, James.
But it's the whole point, dearest. This is what the shelter's for.
But the blessed bomb has gone off already.
Yes, but the fallout is falling out now, see?
No, I don't see. I can't see any sopping fallout. I'm getting out. Just look at all that mess.
No, we must stay in. We must do the correct thing. Come on now, it's late. Let's get to bed.
Yeah, these PA movies are somber. I mean, they're so, you know, we could have a show on, you know, the most depressing post-apocalyptic movies. We could have one on, you know, kind of the funniest, where we talk about stuff like, you know, A Boy and His Dog, or like, you know, Shaun of the Dead or something like that, you know. But I think that it's kind of funny how that genre itself can also cover so many other genres, you know, like sub-genres. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, cool. Well, I have my next one I have on the list is 28 Days Later. And the reason I have this one, this is might be kind of an eyebrow raiser for some people, but the reason I have it is because of the fast-running zombies. You know, before that, we pretty much saw zombies as these lumbering, you know, kind of beings that walk really slow, and you can, you know, load your shotgun and you know, pump them full of lead a few times before they get approachable to you. But in 28 Days Later, you know, they run at you. They jump on you. They do all this crazy stuff. And to me, when you really think about it, that's pretty scary, because there's not really much you can do about it. And they bite you, and you're, you know, now you're a zombie. And it's kind of a hopeless scariness. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's not only is it hopeless, but it's, like you said, it's hopeless with not a whole lot of time to prepare for the end. Yeah. You know, if you have a shambling horde coming at you, you know, you have time to consider your options, and, you know, even if you know that you're not going to make it out, you can kind of prepare yourself. But yeah, when they come running at you, and they're screaming and dripping blood from their mouths, then there's not a whole lot you can do about it.
Yeah, because it's like, we all have our own kind of ideas of what we would do, you know, if the end happened, and, you know, we'd probably do this, and we'd go, you know, hide out in a Walmart and, you know, live for the rest of our lives because we'd have everything. And, you know, it's like we have these scenarios, but if that could all just be completely, you know, down the drain if a zombie is running at you full speed, you know, it's just like it's one of those things where it kind of ruins your plans, I guess.
It does, and yep. Especially how quickly you're infected. I mean, in the other shows, you get sick, you die, you come back to life, and that thing, you get bit, and within seconds, you're already, you know, I mean, it was, and they do it so well. I mean, they make it almost horrific the way you kind of, like, chuck blood for a second, and then all of a sudden your eyes go red, and you're just insane, and then you don't even realize that it's like, you're not dead, you're just, that rage virus has just got you so bad that you're just complete anarchy. I mean, it's horrific for the fact that, like you said, it moves so quick.
Yeah.
If you're talking particular moments in movies, then you'd have to kind of extend the 28 days later to 28 weeks later. Mm-hmm. And that scene when they're all packed into that room.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, the one infected gets in on the end, and then it's like just a wave of infection just crashes across. And that was pretty freaky.
Yeah, it's one of those where when that happens, if you're one of those people in that room, you're just like, oh, God, like, what am I going to do? Like, I can't even imagine that.
And when you get yourself, this is going to hurt.
Yeah, when you get to that point where you just can't, you try to imagine what you would be thinking in that moment, and it's just, you can't, you know, you just can't even fathom what that would be like, and that's scary. That's pretty scary right there.
Definitely.
Hello? Father.
Take us girls! What's that in there? Drink? Oh, yes! Drink! 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 Ice biscuits!
Cool. Well, let's see. I have another one here. Again, these aren't in order, because I think if they were in order, I'd probably, like you said, Threads, that would be one of the top, I would say. But so this next one I have is actually a really scary one for, again, it's a really somber movie, is The Road. This movie was so, it was also gritty, and it was also scary, but it wasn't in that documentary way that Threads was. But The Road was kind of one of those where it's approached from the view of being scary as a father. You know what I mean? I mean, for me particularly, I guess. But, you know, for anyone out there who's a father who can look at something like this and just think about how you would be able to survive with just you and your child. And then when you get to that point where you find out you're dying, you know, and then you have to kind of go on and you have to, you know, make your child think that you're not dying. And you know what I mean? It's just, it's all those things. And it's another one of those where you just, it really makes you think about it for a long time after you watch the movie.
Well, and then the thing with that one too is it's like a thinker kind of somberness, because it didn't have action. All it did was it stuck you face first into the feel and emotion of it, and it wouldn't let you go. And it was almost like, let me take everything that's depressing and sad and just rip your guts out with it. But it was in a way that you couldn't argue with.
Yeah, so it was definitely real. And you know, I have two small children myself, so when I first read the book, I mean, it was devastating to see how it happened. And it's one of those things where, you know, do you try and keep the false hope alive as long as you can, knowing that things probably aren't going to turn out well? Or, it's just, wow.
Yeah, and I think even for a scary moment in the movie, I mean, aside from the parts where, you know, the kind of the deep underlying story, the part when this is in the book too, but where they're upstairs in that bathroom and the people are coming into the house, and he gives his son the gun and he says, you know, I told you what to do with it. You know what to do. And you just hold it in your mouth like this, you know, and this is what you do. And it's like, holy crap. You know, you just,
he tells them, do it hard and fast.
Yeah.
Like they trained it.
Yeah. And it's just, wow, that's powerful. I mean, it's powerful in a just a whole different kind of scariness.
The roads are peopled by gangs looking for food.
That boy looks hungry. Why don't y'all come on the truck?
You look at him again, I'll shoot you in the head.
I don't think you killed a man in your life.
Okay, so the next one I have, this is, again, kind of a fast-paced one. This is I Am Legend. And we had a show about this as well. But there are, this is one where it's not the entire story that's really scary, because I actually, like I said in the show that we did about it, I actually kind of enjoyed the story and the book too. But this is one where it's, there are two parts in particular where it's just really freaky. It's like freak you out, it's kind of scary. There's the one part where, at the end, where there's the kind of leader vampire guy, and I say vampire, but, you know, it's a little different in the movie, but where the guy was running at the glass, you know, and he's, like, smashing into the glass, trying to get to Will Smith, who's on the other side of it, in that little medical chamber thing. And the glass isn't budging, you know, he's smashing into it, and then it starts cracking, you know, and then he does it again. And the look on the guy's face, and when you start thinking about, wow, you know, what if you were Will Smith in that situation? You're just like, I just have to sit here and wait for this like creature to break through here and probably rip me apart, and it's not going to feel good. And it's really scary to think about if you were in that situation. But there was another part in that movie that I think was kind of more of a primal fear type of a thing, and that was when he was in the warehouse.
Oh.
And he's looking for his dog, and he's calling for his dog, and he's looking around, and he's shining the flashlight all around, and he knows that, you know, the dark is where they're at, and he needs to get out of there, but he wants to find his dog. So he's shining the light around, and he shines it into a room full of these infected, and they all look at him. And I don't know if maybe it's this special kind of fear that I have. I imagine a lot of people have this fear, but the fear of not being able to see anything around you except for a little tunnel of, you know what I mean? Like that little light where the light is, and not knowing what's around you. You know, it actually reminds me of when I go in like water skiing or something in a lake, and, you know, when you fall off the skis, you kind of sit there for a while and wait for the boat to turn around and get you. And during that time, your legs are kind of dangling, and the whole time I'm thinking, oh my God, something's going to bite my legs off, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's kind of that same thing, because there's like this little, you don't know what's there, you kind of see it, you can see, you know, the infected right in front of you, but you don't know where else they are, and it's just, even now, it freaks me out.
Well, you can feel the theater when you first watch it, the whole theater, you could hear them all go, because as soon as he had to go into the dark, and it's that brilliance of that Alfred Hitchcock, what you can't see is more scary than what you can. I mean, it's very...
Exactly.
You know, it's just like that movie Signs, you know, which was scary, you know, which was scarier, Independence Day or that, because, you know, hearing those things above you walking across the roof was terrifying in and of itself. Out there, somebody's like, I didn't think Signs was that scary. Well, I'm going to be straight up. Signs scared the living hell out of me, but I loved it, you know, and that was the same kind of feel. When he went into that room, you only saw what he saw. Just like when you saw the blood trail going around the corner, and you're like, oh God, it's the dog. And then it turns out to not be the dog. You're like, oh, I mean, you're feeling what he's feeling, and it was brilliant.
Yeah. Did you like that movie, Bill?
Yeah, I kind of did. Like you said, it was different enough from the book that, you know, it wasn't really what I was looking forward to when I went into the movie. But, you know, on its own, it was okay. I mean, I didn't hate it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and a lot of these we're naming here, I think, are kind of more popular choices. You know, we're not getting too obscure. That's why I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say, because I'm naming a lot of really kind of popular ones, but I think that for anyone who, I mean, there's a good chance that people have seen these, you know what I mean? So I think that that's kind of where I'm coming from on these, but this one was one of those where it's like, you know, a lot of hardcore post-apocalyptic fans probably look at this movie, and we mentioned this in the episode, but probably look at this movie and go, oh, it's a Will Smith movie, and it's like, oh, it's, you know, it's a popularized version, and that can't be good. But I think they really did it well, and I think that those two parts that I named, and there are some other really scary parts too, but they really did a good job of just freaking you out.
Yeah, definitely. And that's it. I mean, everything in that, especially in I Am Legend, it took everything that I liked about, they took a lot from that movie, The Omega Man, and things that I enjoyed about that were cool and scary at the same time. And I mean, and they played off a lot on sound. Like one of my favorite scenes in all of that movie is when, and it's just the feel of it, the buildup of it, is when You know, he realize when his alarm goes off on his watch the first time, and he realizes that's when it dawns on you just how bad it gets, and he starts shutting these doors on his windows that you never saw were there, and then he gets crouched down. I mean, the guy's been through this for what, a year, and he's still scared to death at night, and he's sitting there shaking in the bathtub, and you hear these this like kind of noise going by his window, and it just played with your even the dog like whimpering. Like the dog is even used to this, but the dog's still scared to death, and it's like what a brilliant use of sound.
Yeah. Actually, as kind of a, this is a silly little side thing here, but do either of you, well, Bill, I know you're not, you said you're not a gamer, but Jonathan, do you ever play Minecraft?
You know what? I'm new to the Minecraft world, and so far it's fantastic.
Okay, well, so have you experienced the zombies at night yet?
I haven't.
Okay, I'm just going to say this because it's not really related too much, but there's a, that, what you just said just now reminded me of Minecraft reminds me of that part of I Am Legend where, you know, at night in the game the zombies come out and you can kind of hole yourself up in your own little, you know, hole in the ground to protect yourself from the zombies, but you hear them like walking around outside and they're like, and it's freaky. It freaks you out. Anyway, I just thought I'd mention that because I know a lot of people
call that the System Shock 2 moment.
Yeah. Pretty scary.
No! What the hell are you doing out here, Fred? How did you get out of here? Fred, if you're real, you better tell me right now. If you're real, you better tell me right now. Damn it, Fred!
Okay, so my last one I had here was Testament. Now, Testament was a great one. Again, and there's kind of a theme running through my top five. It's another gritty one. It's another one that hits you, you know, in that family, you know, the whole family thing and taking care of the family through just horrible, like, disintegration of, you know, of the everyone involved. You know, people are dying little by little, slowly, and it's one of those, I mean, the neighborhood is kind of dying off, and it's just, I mean, it's all kind of After Effects stuff. It's not, you know, it's not fast-paced, it's not action, it's not blowing up in your face, it's just, you know, the bomb went off far away, and the residual effects are just tearing everybody to pieces, and it's scary to think that's another one of those real possibilities. You know, besides running zombies and, you know, and things like that, it was gritty, and it was just somber again. You know, it's another one. I think I mentioned this on the Threads show, but I always associate Threads and Testament together.
Yeah.
Because I think they have a lot in common. It's kind of like one is almost the British version of...
Exactly. You know, yeah, what happened here, what happened there kind of a thing.
Yeah, so that's probably my last one.
Yeah, that's another example of the helplessness and hopelessness of the situation. And again, as a parent, having to, you know, try and take care of your children and make them as, you know, basically as comfortable as they can be, but knowing that, you know, you're just going to have to watch them die, basically.
Yeah.
So... Yeah. Yeah, it's the total hopelessness, and there's basically nothing at all that you can do about it.
Yep. Well, yeah, that's the same exact thing. I think that's the reason why, you know, and I hold that one in high regard for that exact reason. They give you this false impression that you are watching a happy family movie, and it's not. It's almost this subtle, like, it takes a second for your brain to go, wait a minute, people are starting to die. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, the family, but they still keep that kind of slower, like, you know, this loving mother who's trying to take care of her kids, and it almost, like, messes with your head because you're waiting for this happy, good ending that's never going to come. And it almost rips your guts out from a very slow standpoint, almost like it's playing against everything that your instinct is telling you should happen. It beats cliche on every level.
Yeah, yeah. And I think also this one, I mean, it was kind of teetering on the line of scariness because I think it is more of a drama, more of a you know, somber, like a depressing. You know, it's more of a depressing one than scary. But because of that, and because of the way they portrayed it, where it's unlike Threads, you know, like I said, unlike Threads as a documentary, this was more of a just a drama. And in that way, I think it's they did a great job of making it scary, and another one of those that you think about for a long time after you watch the movie.
Definitely. That one really messed with my head for that reason alone. Because, I mean, like, even the details in it. Like, there's that part in the movie, like movie cliché suggests if there's a detail in a movie, there has to be a reason it was put there. And mm-hmm. it broke cliché that way. Like, you know, she leaves a note for her husband complete with a candle, and they felt the need to put that there. So, it, you know, story dictates that he must come back. Well, not only does he not come back, but it goes completely the opposite direction. So it was almost like this false positive that was like, meant to lull you into like, oh, okay, it's going to end good. No. And when the little kid dies, you're almost in complete shock. Like, wait, he died? Like, well, wait a second. And it was so subtle. And that part when she finally does snap because she's trying to get the teddy bear. Yeah. I mean, it was heart-wrenching because you're like, it's dawning on you, almost like the disbelief they're feeling that, my God, we're not going to live through this.
Yep.
Yeah, oh, man.
Yeah. And plus the scariest part is it was Kevin Costner's first movie, so.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I forgot about that.
I kid. Yeah, that was, and I think Rebecca De Mornay's first movie. I'm not sure.
That might have been hers. Yeah, you might be right there. Business hadn't come out yet, I don't think.
That's true. Well, cool. So, Jonathan, what about your list?
I had five of them, and it's going to be good because on some ways they do cross just a tad, but on some I went into some like, you know, what moments that are post-apocalyptic really freaked me out, and there's a couple that are actually books and then three that are movies, one of which actually does a double on movies, but you'll see why. So the first one was the book The Stand. There's one part in particular, and what I did was I actually tagged a moment in the book. The thing about The Stand was, I think overall, just the horror, first of all, of the fact that what seems to start out as like a random, you know, this base, you know, army base, the virus got out and almost looks like it was a complete fluke, but then you realize that there are powers in play that are far beyond what we're normally, you know, seeing, and you realize that, you know, heaven and hell are pretty much having this final battle, and we're all pawns in it. That in and of itself was, like, horrific. Mm-hmm. But the part I think that really messed with my head that I just loved, and funny enough, the movie version of it was really good, not as good as the book, obviously, because the book's just gargantuan, but there's one part they portrayed really well in the movie, and that is the part when, you know, they had sent some of the spies from Boulder, Colorado, the good guys, in to be spies to find out what the bad guys were up to. And I'll just say good guys, bad guys, because it's easy that way. While they're there, of course, the main guy, who's the dark man, Randall Flagg, knew all along who they were, with the exception of one of them. And he basically captures the one girl and brings her in and plays the most horrific good cop play on her. And basically, like, hey, how are you? Good to meet you. And you can tell that she's taken off guard by this. Like, what? You were supposed to be this horrific monster guy. Oh, no, I don't know why you're so worried about us. And you can tell that he's, I mean, it's not unlike the way that SS commander in Inglourious Bastards, you know, that the one that hunts down the Jewish people plays off, where he'll kind of smile and get you all comfortable, and then he hits you from behind with something you were not expecting. And that part when Randall Flagg is like, I'm just gonna let you guys go. And she's like, you're gonna let us go? Yeah, definitely. Oh, just one thing. There's one of your guys I can't tell where he is. Just tell me where he's at now. And at that moment, you see the other flip side come out. And it was, I remember being younger and being like, that might have been the scariest thing I've seen since Pennywise the Clown, which to this day still makes me hate clowns. So.
Yeah, I could see that. I can see it. I liked both the book and the movie. The movie version of that, of course, the book a little bit better. But yeah,
that was. And what about you? Do you want Bill? Do you have anything you want to add on that? But had you read The Stand?
Oh yeah, The Stand is definitely my favorite post-apocalyptic novel of all time.
Awesome.
Any particular moment that stuck out to you as being horrific?
Well, there's a section in the extended version, kind of as the superflu is taking hold around the country, where he takes just like a chapter to describe everything that's happening in the different areas of the country and how the military is breaking down and you know, how the riots are starting and, you know, just that, like you said, just that one chapter kind of encapsulates, you know, everything that can be, you know, so horrible about, you know, the virus it's spreading and the fact that it's spreading so far and so fast and has, you know, so much effect on the populace. And so that's the just the one section of the book that I always remember the most.
Yeah, no, that was, and in the movie they just barely touch on it for a split second, but yeah, I think that, you know, the way that the society seems to crumble, that's always been, post-apocalyptic-wise in general, one of my favorite moments, and especially why Threads, you just feel that build-up until the moment you know the bombs are coming. And I can watch it over and over and still feel that build-up, like, oh, crap, you know, like, maybe it won't happen this time, and it always does. The other book that I was going to mention, and funny enough, it you know, Stephen King, God bless him, he can hit that post-apocalyptic right on the head. Have either of you guys ever read the book Cell?
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Okay, yeah, and what it is, I'll just recap it really quick, and what it is basically that one day there's this thing, and it's the beauty of this is you don't get all the answers, but you just know that there was a pulse that went through every cell phone at this particular time of this one day, when everybody who was on a cell phone, and let's be honest, it's pretty much everybody, suddenly goes completely insane. And it's almost like they are reduced to this like primitive level. But you're seeing it from the point of view of this guy who at that moment watches everything fall apart around him. Like this lady basically is on her cell phone and she drops the phone and goes and grabs a hold of the ice cream man and rips his ear off with her teeth. And like just complete insanity. And then as the book goes on, you start to figure out that there's coordination and something behind it. And I won't go more than that because that's half of the fun of the book. But let's just say there's this one part in the book, and I remember being absolutely like horrified at the buildup of this. There is this moment when, let's just say that they find that they're all I'll call them infected, even though that's not really what they are, but these infected all seem to be coordinating where they lay down at particular times, like almost like turning off like a switch, and they lay down in the middle of this football field. And they seem to be all like half coherent, but they don't seem to know what's going on around them. And these guys get this idea that they're going to light the place on fire.
And yeah, I remember that.
Finally do. I kid you not. It was like it's one of those moments where they do something that they feel is the right thing, but just the horror of what they're hearing is enough to make them wonder, like, did we make a mistake? But at the same time, there are infected around them that are reacting to it too, basically looking at them going, we know it was you. And for the rest of the book, they're plagued by that decision they had made. And I kid you not, that part was like, oh, no, because everything changed at that moment when they tried to kill them. But yeah,
yeah, that was a great book.
Yeah, Sean, you have to read that. It's serious. Yeah. It's a fun book. The ending, there are those that would say the ending is a little stale. I disagree. I think that the ending was precisely what the kind of, like, you're not going to get all the answers, but you're going to get some. I loved the way it kind of let your mind fill the rest in. But,
Is that a recent book?
I would say probably, what's it been, about 4 years, 5 years?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a little longer than that. 2006.
Yeah, okay. So 2006, yeah, my time flies, wow.
There was a time in the 90s when I think I read every single one of Stephen King's books, but then I haven't really kept up with it lately. But yeah, I have to check that out.
Yeah, that's a fun one. And you'll be able to read that in a matter of days. I mean, it's not even it's one of those easy read types that you can just blow through.
So even I could read it, right?
Yeah. So easy a caveman can read it. And this will be the part, then my next one, this will be the part where we kind of cross paths here, because I also mentioned 28 Days Later, but the part, I think there are two scenes in that movie that struck me as being absolutely horrific. And one was right at the very beginning when he hasn't figured out what's going on, and he goes into that church where all the dead bodies are, and he goes, hello? And all of a sudden this priest just goes, you know, like lifts up his head, and that's everything all of a sudden just goes insane after him. And he's, like, standing there kind of, like, in shock, like, whoa, what's going on? And then you just realize how bad it got. And just that moment of, like, run! I mean, it was, like, I remember just, like, freaking at that scene. And then the other scene is the moment of horror when you realize near the end that the place they're looking to find shelter is almost worse than the monsters themselves. And I think the point at which you realize that those soldiers are there's more to it than they're leading them to believe was the other point where you almost realize, you know, maybe the grass wasn't greener on the other side. And, you know, it's like, maybe they should have stayed in the apartment, you know?
That's always the thing in those kind of movies. It's like, why didn't they just stay where they were?
Yeah, like in Jaws, when you're like, don't get in the water now!
Exactly.
I have two more left. This one is actually, you'll get a kick out of this one because it's post-apocalyptic, but not on this planet, post-apocalyptic. And it's actually a movie. Did you ever see the movie called Screamers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that movie, and it's post-apocalyptic because, you know, they had had a nuclear war on that planet. It was like company against company, the corporations.
Yeah.
And the scenes, though, just the sheer, the thought of it. I mean, like, when I remember watching that movie and being in awe, even to the point where it kind of, I don't say it falls apart near the end, but it gets a little bit different feeling. Mm-hmm. But the moments when those things were coming out of the ground, like just the way that they would sense your heartbeat, and they if you didn't have the little pulse thing on your arm to negate your heartbeat, they would come ripping out of the ground and just tear you apart. Like,
yeah.
That was a brilliant idea.
I forgot all about that movie. That was that's an old movie. That was one, I think my dad had that on VHS, and it was, I remember the cover was just like a dude with like all his skin off or something. I mean, it was like,
yeah, it's actually Peter Weller, you know, from you know, Buckaroo Banzai fame, or RoboCop for that matter.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And he's such, like, the way he acts. I mean, he's so dead serious. It almost gave, like, it lent some credibility to it because it almost made it more unnerving. But just the fact that, I mean, there was just something about the way that those robots worked, and I love the one line when they say, you know, well, where do they come from? Well, we don't know. All we know is that somebody built the factory underground, pushed the button, and ran like hell. And it's almost like the thing sort of evolved on its own. And it, you know, this could almost point right at the biggest horror of them all, which is, you know, the Terminator Skynet story in and of itself. But there was something about Screamers that almost kind of hit you from a sci-fi point of view. Is like, that was kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, it still counts, even though it was on another planet. But,
I mean, it was. There had been a nuclear war, and so it was sort of kind of like Borderlands. You know, it was kind of Borderlands, is where it's not here, but it still could be here, kind of a thing.
Yeah, or Tabula Rasa.
Or Tabula Rasa, for that matter, which pretty much suffered the same fate as there that planet. The other one, and this is one where, you know, everybody out there is going to nod their head. This is a classic. And this can go to the new or to the old, and I'm going to point it at the old particular. And it's the original War of the Worlds.
Oh, okay.
Never in my life, as a child, have I ever crapped in my pants at the fact that not only... And there's this one scene where they're inside that church hiding, and they see the alien rip by, and you don't quite know what you just saw. Like, what the frack was that? You know, and it's funny because you compare that to the new one where I feel like they blew an opportunity to do that again, and instead they sort of made it like, let's watch them play with bikes. But the original one, the way they had that thing kind of come around the corner, and it's in that 1950s, like, eerie way, there's just something inherently scary about the sound and the feel of that movie, because it's so horrific even for that. You know, and back then, I don't know how they didn't commit suicide watching that film, but the reason I apply it to the new one a little bit is because in the new one, parts of that were kind of hokey, but the one part to this day that I give total credit to the new War of the Worlds was that thing they did when they were getting ready to coordinate, and they do that kind of voice. There was something inherently unnerving about that, the fact that they would do these bullhorn noises to communicate. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, the rest of the movie aside, that scene where they're getting on the boat and they hear the noise and they both turn around and there's suddenly three of them on top of the hill looking down, that was scary. It was freakish. I don't know. I'm a freak for the alien attack movies. I don't know why. I love, like, the thought of that kind of thing. Like, well, not love it, the thought of it. Like, hey, come down, come get me. But more like just how, like, helpless we seem to be with something like that.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see it. And plus, you know, the whole War of the Worlds thing where it was supposed to be, you know, tricking people into thinking it was real.
Oh, yeah. The Orson Welles accident-prone world that back then.
Yeah.
And where people had car accidents because they thought we were really being invaded. Yeah. Well, I get that whenever Barbra Streisand is on HBO. So, but it's kind of. But there was something, and I didn't. You know, I throw that in not because of it being classic, but because, you know, as classic as it is, you know, even that aside, I remember that moment being as a child watching War of the Worlds on TV with my grandparents. And just, like, everybody else is like, oh, yeah, scary. Mm-hmm. And I'm just sitting there wide open, like, I'm not going to sleep for years. And, like, being just mortified by this. And it stuck with me for a long time.
Cool. Well, Bill, what about you? Do you have any top scary movies, post-apocalyptic?
Well, the the first thing that I think of when I think of scary post-apocalyptic is one of those things, like you mentioned with that warehouse scene in I Am Legend, where, you know, it kind of affected you in particular. Mm-hmm. So here in Hawaii, we have monster cockroaches. They're like, you know, a 2-inch long cockroach is nothing here. And, you know, growing up, there have been several occasions where, you know, I'm asleep in bed and I feel a cockroach, you know, walking across my face. And so I've grown up hating these things, and they fly and they dive bomb you and they're horrible. And so every time I see that scene from Damnation Alley where they go into that town with the killer cockroaches, oh, that always gets to me. It gives me the heebie-jeebies just thinking about it.
Oh, man, you're on the nose with that one. Because it was like that, you know, that movie The Mist with Stephen King movie, yeah. The Mist, when those things land on the, like, I get the same, like, that Damnation Alley scene, that always, it gets the same feeling as that one, because you're right, it's like, it's that arachnophobia. I watched it when I was 12, but I still scream every time I see a spider, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, you're right, that scene was horrific.
Yeah, I always think about that one. But it did give us one of the best quotes in post-apocalyptic movie history, though.
Oh, yeah. No, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, I need to go back and watch that. Isn't that on Netflix? Is that on Netflix streaming? Do we know that?
I don't know. I'll have to check that out.
I need to check that because I haven't watched that for, God, like, probably, like, since I was younger. It was on, like, TV on a Saturday or something, and, you know, I used to watch it alongside, like, you know, Thunderdome or something.
This whole town is infested with killer cockroaches.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's on Netflix at all.
Damn, that would be a hoot.
So what else? Do you have any other ones?
Well, just to go back to the somber mood, you know, we talked about Threads and When the Wind Blows and Testament. And the other one that kind of has that hopeless feel is On the Beach. You know, whether you're talking the book or the movie or I actually just listened to a BBC radio dramatization of it just a week or two ago. And, you know, the nuclear war has happened in the Northern Hemisphere, and the fallout is slowly drifting down towards all the people in Australia. And so they know that they have, you know, basically 6 months to live. And, I mean, the book is crazy, the way they just kind of go along with their lives, and they plant gardens, and they take college courses, and, you know, at the end, they're just like, okay, that's it, we're all done. And, yeah, again, that hopeless feeling, and just the fact that there's absolutely zero you can do about it, that anybody can do about it. So that's another scary one.
Yeah, I think that a lot of these, and you could see kind of through our different opinions that, you know, whether it's something that's kind of scary from a, you know, like a long-term perspective where, you know, this would be a scary situation, or if it's a jump-out scary, or whether it's, like we were saying, you know, like our personal things that scare us the most, no matter, you know, what they are, if they're bugs or, you know, a tunnel vision in a room full of zombies. You know, it's just one of those things where it's different for everyone. So what I want people to do, of course, is write into us. You know, let us know what you think is scary. You know, what is the scariest movie or the scariest moment or, you know, a book, movie, whatever, post-apocalyptic that you've experienced or you've seen. I'd really like to hear a lot more opinions on that, because I think that it's something that we could talk about, you know, even though we're doing this just for Halloween, we could talk about this forever. You know, it's a pretty cool topic, especially, you know, we like this genre because it's not, you know, happy and you know, and it is somber and it is scary and things like that. So I think it's a pretty important thing to highlight, I think. But,
yeah, definitely.
What I want to do now is we have a few emails. We have four of them that I just wanted to read really quickly, kind of get through these. Because a lot of them, I mean, a lot of them aren't really asking questions, but they're just, you know, kind of giving some information on some stuff that I wanted to share with the reader or with the listeners. This first one is from Terrence, and it says, "Hello, Sean and Jonathan. This email technically isn't post-apocalyptic. However, it does deal with the end of humanity. Have either of you seen the History Channel series called Life Without People?
Yeah,
that's a good series. Series examines what would happen to the Earth, in particular, everything man has built, if human life suddenly ceased to exist. Season 1 of the series just hit Netflix streaming, so if you haven't seen it yet, maybe you can catch it there. One interesting gaming tie-in to the show, Richard Garriott gets a mention in the first show of the series. Love the show, Terrence. Yeah, this he sent this back in September, but I did actually, when it came to streaming, I went through and I watched them, and we need to have a show about that. I mean, originally, yeah. I think when I first started watching it, I thought it was a little hokey. You know, I was like, because it was like 1 hour after people, 2 hours after people, 1 day after people, and it's like, wait, nothing's going to happen, you know, like 1 hour after people, nothing, you know, nothing's going to happen. Crazy. But then it starts going into, like, you know, 50 years after people, 1,000 years after people, and that's when it gets interesting, I think. Because then it, you know, it talks about the power infrastructure, you know, what's going to happen with that, and what's going to happen with buildings, how long does concrete stay up, you know, how long will skyscrapers stay up, and, you know, things like that are really interesting. There was one about the statue, I forgot what it's called, the statue in Brazil, with Jesus, and he had, has his arms out. Mm-hmm, I forgot what that's called. And they're talking about, you know, the exact weak points of that statue, and like the hands would fall off first, and then the head. You know, I think that's really interesting stuff. But you guys, have you guys both seen that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. In fact, my mom knows me so well that she bought me the box set as a Christmas present last year.
Nice.
That's awesome. That's the thing about it. It's like, it's not, like you said, it looks hokey, but then you watch it and you're like, you know, this isn't, somebody did their homework on this. It's not your typical, like, Discovery Channel, like, a girl needed something to graduate from liberal arts college. It's almost like, literally, like, somebody, like, really put some time and effort into a true, like, you're almost like, yeah that would, like, when they talked about even the pets, I'm like, I'll be doggone. Like, nobody talks about that. I'll be doggone. You know, like, no pun intended there. No. Doggone.
Okay, so this next email, this is from Bryce, and it says, "Hi guys, I've just recently found the show and I love it. I'm so excited that someone shares my love of the post-apocalyptic genre. It's also clear that you love sci-fi in general. I'm in nerd heaven when listening, so it's one of my few outlets that isn't all about being adult. Thanks for putting out a fun, informative show, Bryce." Awesome. Well, thanks
for
listening. Yeah, we always appreciate that.
That's very kind.
Yeah. Okay, so this next one, this is from Ryan. He says, "I just wanted to shoot a note to you guys to say thanks for what you do." Man, I see a theme here, don't you? "I've been listening since episode 2 or 3, and I didn't really understand how much I liked post-apocalyptic themes until I started following your podcast." That's interesting. It's kind of the opposite.
Oh.
That's cool. "It wasn't until I heard you guys talking about stuff I was familiar with, like Fallout, The Postman, Death Race, Mad Max, etc., and why you liked it, or what themes carried through the movie, game, book, that I started to realize what it was that drew me to those things. I was never really conscious of how much I loved the PA genre growing up, as I was always a big sci-fi and fantasy reader, and when I was a kid, it was all lumped together under the same heading. Looking back now, I can piece together some of the big memories, and it all starts to fall together. In 1994, I was 16, and I admit, kind of disappointed that the world wasn't becoming what I'd seen on Thundar the Barbarian when I was younger. I'd spent forever in random encounters looking for the crashed alien ship and the blaster in Fallout. I dig S.M. Sterling's Dies of Fire and the books that follow in that series. When Sysadmins Ruled the Earth is a great short story, and the collection I found it in is full of good PA literature. I love movies like Doomsday, Mad Max, Resident Evil, and Book of Eli. And last but not least, I appreciate Through the Aftermath, as you guys have helped me find more great stuff to read about, watch, or game with, and continue to do so. May your dish broadcast till the juice runs out. Thanks, Ryan." Wow. That's quite an honor there. I mean, I like the fact that he mentions, you know, some of his favorite movies like Doomsday, Mad Max, Resident Evil. And then he, you know, he's kind of like, "I love these movies. I've always loved them. And, oh, yeah, I guess I see a theme here." You know, and he didn't really realize that that's what that theme was. But we're happy to let you realize that's what you like to do. Because, I mean, I love those movies, too. The kind of the action-y, you know, post-apocalyptic ones.
So, yeah, very cool.
Yeah, that's great. Especially being able to find new stuff. I mean, that's one thing true about, you know, even, you know, hosting the show. I mean, how much we've learned, you know, from people writing it. That's why we always encourage it. Like, tell us more. Because, we, you know, by all means, we do not consider ourselves necessarily like, you know, we're fanatics with it, by no means masters of it, I don't think.
Yeah,
so
it's like we're all in the same community, but we're the ones with the microphones. That's the only difference. Like, you know, it's like we want to know this stuff too. Like, we want to, you know, hear about it as much as we can too. Yeah.
Yeah.
This next email, this is from Richard, and it says, I saw this and I thought it looked very post-apocalyptic, like something right out of Fallout. Penthouse founder Bob Guccione died yesterday. This was sent last week. In 1972, Bob Guccione put $45 million into opening the Penthouse Adriatic Club in then-communist Yugoslavia. He staffed it with 70 American penthouse pets. Here's what it looks like today. And then I actually looked through this. He's got a link to it here. I'll put in the show notes. But it's a lot like the Chernobyl pictures that we saw. You know, it's this big, elaborate kind of luxury resort that was completely, like you said, put $45 million into it in 1972. That was a lot of money. And then they just kind of left it. And it's all overgrown, you know, it just looks very desolate and crazy. And he continues on with the email, and he says, it looks kind of creepy, but it would make an awesome set piece. Although I'm sure there are many places in Eastern Europe that look like this today and would make awesome set pieces. Reminds me of those pictures in Chernobyl. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm going to put a link to that, just because I'm kind of fascinated with that, and it sounds like Richard is too, that, you know, the whole, you know, this is what, this used to be something huge, and now it's, you know, it's nothing. It's kind of like, you know, those old villages, the old towns that they used to make in the bomb testing areas in Nevada, you know, where they and they're still there, you know.
Oh, yeah. They take tours down there, in fact. I'm getting ready to plan one.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Wow, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, that would be really cool. But yeah, it just reminds me of that. And another thing, actually, I wanted to point out here about Bob Guccione is I read this when he died. He actually bought an atomic reactor.
Really?
Like, that's one of the things he spent his money on, I guess, from Penthouse, is he bought an atomic – I think it was either a nuclear reactor or a part of one or something like that. And people were like – what's he going to do with that? You know, and no one really knew, but he still had it when he died, I guess. But that's scary.
That is kind of great. Well, I guess he took Adam and Eve literally. That was improv too. I'm ashamed that I'm even here. Adam and Eve. Okay, that's going into a skit somewhere. I'm writing that down.
Awesome. That was the last email we had. So, yeah, thanks for sending the emails. And if anyone wants to send more, you can send them to ttaftermath@gmail.com. But before we go, I wanted to see, you know, again, thank you, Bill, for coming on and everything. But was there anything that you wanted to kind of promote that you're working on now, any projects or anything?
Yeah, so if you go back to my website, again, that's at megaton.us, you'll find links to a post-apocalyptic wiki that we've set up. So anyone is free to come in and, you know, provide content for that. And also a post-apocalyptic URL shortening service that I have. Now, that's open to the public, so anybody's free to use that for, you know, tweets or blog posts, anything like that. But the main things I wanted to make sure your listeners knew about were a live chat page that we have set up. It's actually an IRC channel, but if you don't want to deal with your own IRC client, you can just go to my website and click on the live chat link. And you know, there's usually a couple of us in there basically all day. I stay in there all day at work. And so if you want to come in and, you know, talk, you know, books, movies, games, anything about the PA genre, then, you know, we're usually in there and willing to trade stories. And along those lines, you've mentioned before, but also wanted to throw in a plug for the post-apocalyptic forum at postapocalypticforum.com. And so with the demise of the Through the Aftermath forum, then we went ahead and set that up as a place, in a community where people can come together and talk about any kind of media, anything going on in the genre. So if any of your listeners are interested in having conversations with, you know, the rest of us that are interested in PA topics, then, you know, we welcome you to come by and join up and join the conversation.
Yeah, Jonathan and I, you know, we've stopped by there, and I really appreciate it. I know, like, right when the forums went down, I was kind of to the point where I'm like, I'm not even going to deal with this anymore, you know. And boy, I tell you, we've had more problems with this, with the feeds and the forums and on this show. But you set those up, and then you were like, you know, this could be kind of a haven for the, you know, the old forums, mm-hmm. people who were there, and, you know, they're welcome to come over. So I thought that was really cool. So, definitely check that out. We'll put links to that in the show notes. For all of those, and you know, your main website and the different projects and the forum and all that. I think the live chat thing sounds really cool. I think, and I'm gonna have to stop in there sometime and kind of chat.
Yeah, with there's all you gotta do is go to the website, choose a username, and log in. There's no other software required.
Cool. Ease of use is my friend.
Yeah, we need to be in there a little more too, because I you know, it's really well done. Everything was fantastic in there. And you know, now that my world's kind of calming down on the work front, you know, that definitely should. You'll probably see me in there quite a bit more.
Awesome,
cool. Hey, I do have one other thing for kind of as a thank you for having me on the show and something to kind of give back to you and your listeners. I was contacted by a representative of a company called Motion Twin, who is about to release an online browser-based zombie survival game called Die Tonight. That's at Die Tonight is D-I-E, the number 2, N-I-T-E, so dietonight.com. And basically they're looking for beta testers for the English language version of this game. Apparently there's about 180,000 players signed up on the French language version of this, but they're just about to launch to English, and so they're looking for beta players, and so they're basically giving me a number of beta keys to give out. And so if any of your listeners are interested in having access to the beta, then just tell them to stop by the website at megaton.us and go ahead and contact me with your name and email address, and then I'll forward that back off to the developers and see if we can get you in.
Oh, what? Nice.
That's very kind. Yeah, and I'm looking at the site right now, and it looks like an absolute riot.
That's cool. That's awesome. Yeah, that definitely, I'm going to take advantage of that, too. I think sounds like fun. How many beta keys did you say they had?
Well, he said at least 10, but he keeps asking if we need more. So,
oh, okay.
If
we've only got 10, I'm not going to take one.
At least the first 10 to reply are going to get in. And he said that go ahead and send over all the names for everybody who's interested, and at the very least, they'll go into a hat to pull out for however many extra keys they have left.
Oh, okay. Cool. Very cool. I know we have a lot of gamers who listen, so I'm sure we'll get that filled up. Awesome. Well, again, thanks for coming on the show. I mean, it's always fun to have someone on, you know, a third person, but especially when that third person really, you know, knows their stuff. and so it was a blast having you on here, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. It was a great time.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Cool. Well, okay, so if anyone wants to, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We also have, the Facebook page going, Twitter, where I announce when the new shows come out. And then, of course, there's throughtheaftermath.blogspot.com, where we have all of the show notes for each show, and you can subscribe to the feed and everything. And speaking of the feed, I want to mention really quickly that we have an issue with the feed itself lately, last few shows. And this is what it is it's kind of a Libsyn thing. They changed over their service. They upgraded it, quote unquote. So it kind of messed up our feed. And we're not really sure why. Brent from Virgin Worlds is trying to figure it out too, but this has been going on a long time. So there is a workaround. And basically, we have an option here. The workaround is, if you go to our website at throughtheaftermath.blogspot.com and you look at episode 39, the one before this, in one of the comments, the fourth comment by Corny, he actually talks about the workaround, and it's he essentially takes the .xml off of the feed. So if you try that, it should work. And I'm going to actually see about getting that changed in iTunes, which is a whole production that usually isn't very easy getting anything done in iTunes. But we're going to work on trying to get that changed. But in the meantime, you can if you don't use iTunes and you use a different feed reader, you can just take that .xml
off of there, and it should work, according to Corny here. If that doesn't work and we still run into problems, the last resort is I'm going to pull it out of this feed and just start a whole new one. Of course, the drawback of that is that, you know, you guys will all have to resubscribe to a whole new feed, and I'll probably, you know, lose listeners because, you know, it's hard to kind of coordinate that. You know, not everybody listens to every show, you know, right when it comes out. So that would be the very last resort, and I don't want to have to do it, but if we have to, you know, we'll do that. But we'll talk about that on the next episode and kind of see where things are going from there.
Can I jump something in here?
Sure.
Just a thought for all those out there, and I know, like, I jokingly had mentioned that perhaps my Halloween costume may have been somewhat Fallout in relation, but to all you listeners out there, if any of you guys out there for fun, you know, dress up for Halloween, it happens to be post-apocalyptic themed, be sure to send us pictures, because we want to see them. I think this is a riot, so I have fun with this Halloween stuff, so definitely send us your pics, and, you know, let's see what everybody dressed up as, and you'll probably see here too, and this is something that Sean and I had talked about, the possibility of, you know, maybe, you know, on our blog, of maybe putting a little more here and there than just the standard, you know, here's our next episode, maybe putting in a little more personalization, and as time goes on, we'll see how that works, but yeah, do send us the pics if you do dress up.
Yeah, definitely, that would be really cool. I love seeing that stuff. I mean, you know, you saw my costume in one of the last show notes there with the tire on my arm and everything, and so I'm a huge fan of that stuff. So yeah, that's a great idea. I would love to see that.
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, cool. So I guess that's about it. That'll do it until next time. But after that, let's see. We got November coming up. We got the holidays. We got Christmas. So you know, we might not get every 2 weeks. We might be a little slow there through the holidays while we take you know, breaks and go visit family and all that, but you can definitely count on us going through at least a couple more episodes till the end of the year. So we don't know what we're going to do yet, but it should be pretty exciting. Maybe something Christmas related.
Yeah,
last year.
Yeah. I promise I won't sing again. No, I'm just kidding. Now we're back to Halloween. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. All right, so again, thanks everyone. Thanks, Bill, for coming on. And we will talk to everyone next week. So until then, this is Sean.
And this is Jonathan. And Bill, this is where you're supposed to say the magic ending.
And stay alive out there.
Yay!
There you go. See you, everyone.